Yeah, the reason I created the sit down, one of the insular reasons I created it was to watch The Irishman. And I think the last 30 minutes of The Irishman are the, could be one of the better films of all time, just to, with the end and the way it is. And it's fascinating to me that all the stuff that Frank Sheeran did, you know, if you remember in the scene, like he's talking to the nurse and she doesn't know who any of the people in the picture are. And he can't believe that. And I think he realizes, wow, you know, I did all this. You know, and nobody knows who I am.
The following podcast is a Carolina Boys production. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Crime and Entertainment. I hope everyone enjoyed last week's episode with Bill O'Hanlon. He's actually going to be coming back. He's got some updates in the case and really interesting story with that. I mean, Bill is quite possibly facing a lengthy stretch in prison, but he's still steadfast on fighting this thing. So obviously we wish him the best and look forward to hearing the update. Today we had Jeff Nadeau from the Sit Down podcast come on and share some of his insight into the recent individuals that's created some shows like Joey Merlino, and obviously some of the ones that's created them over the past few years, and just kind of the twists and turns that the mob genre has faced, you know, because I think 40 years ago, if you would have said some of the top guys in the, I want to say mafia, would be having shows on YouTube, I think people would think you're crazy. But now it's crazy if they don't. Like the Gemini twins that just got out of jail, I heard they're already going to have a podcast. So now it's like the thing that was so totally opposite that somebody would do now is what's expected. And it's strange times, but you know, the benefit of the general public is they get to hear these stories. So check this out here with Jeff Nadeau on Crime and Entertainment. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Crime and Entertainment. I have here today a very special guest. I actually owe this individual a lot of credit. You know, I studied a lot of his work, even though we've only recently met online. I've studied a lot of his work. He's got a great podcast called The Sit Down on YouTube. A lot of great mafia content on there. Please welcome Jeff Nadeau. Jeff, how are you, my friend?
Well, my friend. Hey, Wade, I appreciate you inviting me and look forward to chatting. For the kind words as well. You know, I don't know that we can do anything better than anybody else. I guess I just try to put in as much work as I can. And, you know, I'm glad to see other people succeeding in the genre as well, because there's a lot of negativity and there's a couple of good people out there. So I appreciate you having me on.
Well, thank you. And, you know, I don't know if I would classify my channel as, I guess the word would be MobTube. There are some channels that are classified to just as that. But we definitely talk to a lot of people that, you know, have some that have cooperated, some that have not. And that seems to be like a point of emphasis right now, because obviously Joey Merlino recently come out with a podcast, and anybody that's followed your channel or, you know, anything related to the genre, Joey's got a reputation, allegedly, of things that he may or may not have been involved in. But he's built his channel on the principles of, you know, going after cooperators and informants. And that's all well and good if that's how he's building up that platform. But I think without that, if you're somebody like, you know, me, a lot of times you don't have an option but to have people on that have, you know, cooperated, because that's who you're going to get your information from. Because nobody that's been in this life and done anything and gotten away with it is going to come on a YouTube channel and talk about it. They would be an idiot to do so.
100%. I mean, I deal with people all the time that are in the streets currently that will contact me and we'll talk about things that are going on. I've developed, you know, not friendships, I would say, but just kind of chatting about things. And, you know, they always complain to me. They'll cry and complain about, you know, Gene Borello or this guy said something or that person said something. And I said, you know, you're welcome to come on and talk about it at any point. And,
right.
And there's always that, well, I can't do that. And, you know, I kind of want to stay anonymous. So I think you know, again, those are going to be the only people that we hear from, because those are the only individuals that will come out and talk. But yeah, you know, I think, you know, look, we all, I don't think any of us are people that, you know, none of us like people that rat. I don't think that's a common thing that people are into. Look, if you do a crime, you know, you should know that you're going to face a punishment when you go to, when you go and commit that crime. Mm-hmm. Now, again, I don't judge anybody. I probably used to, but I think at this point, you know, I'm not someone that tries to include my personal opinion. Sometimes I'll give it, but all in all, when I put a video out, the goal is to educate people, let them make a decision. And that's that. It doesn't matter to me if someone cooperated. It's not my life. It's theirs. You know, I think, again, when we were 10, you know, we were 20, 30 years old, maybe we cared. But you know, now that we're a bit older, I don't think any of us care. You know, it's like you said, that's who you're getting the information from. And 95% of the people like it. And unfortunately, I'm not going to cater to 5% that don't. I want to get the most people, and most of the people just don't care. So I think we have to do what we have to do.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. And I'm like you, you know, I never judge any of these. I always say I can't put myself in anybody's shoes. You know, they had to make the decision to do whatever they did. I'm sure I would like to think it was probably a hard decision, because I mean, I know people look at these things when I try to explain to people that aren't really educated about it. And this goes beyond mafia. I mean, you know, biker territories, and you say such things like, well, this is this biker group's territory. It sounds comical to the person that doesn't really understand the significance of if another gang comes in on another territory, like that's serious shit. That could get people killed. But to the people that are not educated to it, it sounds ridiculous. But I'm like, those kind of things are serious. So I know at some point in time, a lot of these guys, be it Gene or whoever, they took this serious. Just so happened, whatever the situation was, they got into a predicament where they figured it was better to cooperate. I mean, according to Gene, and I recently had him on the show, and I had never interviewed Gene before, he said basically he wasn't getting paid, or he wasn't getting a lawyer provided to him, and he felt they were trying to let him rot. So he decided to roll. I mean, you know, I can't sit here and say he should have done that or shouldn't have done that. That's not my call. That was a Gene call, and he made it.
Listen, Wade, here's the thing. Anybody that cooperates with the government, particularly mobsters or people that are associated with the mob, they do it because of one thing. Or anyone that cooperates, they don't want to go to jail. It's very simple, right? You can use these, oh, they didn't do this, they didn't do that, they were going to have sex with my wife, they were going to take my businesses. That's obviously sucks. And I'm sure that aids a little bit to it. But in the end, if you're facing 5-10 years, most of the time you're going to do what you have to do. But most of these people are facing long prison sentences. They don't want to go to prison. And I'll tell you right now, with the exception of Michael Franzese, I've talked to every person in this life at some point or another, whether it's through text or through phone, whether it's through an interview. I talked to all of them. You know, ones that you don't know, ones that you do know. And all of them have what I call a sadness that I cannot describe. And it is something where you can tell it eats them up every day. Yeah. I talked to a guy on the regular. His name is Frank Fiordalino. He was an associate with the Bonanno family. Wade, this is a guy that goes back 100 years in the mafia. He was born in Sicily. His father or his uncles, his cousins are still in the mafia today. They're made members of the mafia. His whole family has deserted him. I see the sadness and guilt that he lives with every day. He can't go back and hang out in the corner with his friends. He can't, you know, play bocce and have a sausage and peppers. His life is completely different now. And all these people live with that same sadness. Do I feel bad for them? Yeah, some of them I do. I think some of them, if they could make the decision over, they probably wouldn't have did it. But they all have that sadness. And I think we should all just kind of stop generalizing it. And generally it's people that really have no connection to the streets whatsoever that have this stupid code of, oh, I hate this, I hate that. And it's like, well, hold on. I mean, I can understand, you know, let's say your father was a mobster, but I think if your father was a mobster, you would understand that he was a criminal, right? Yeah. And these people, they take the word rat and they think, well, he's just horrible and awful because he put these mean, bad men in prison. And it's like, well, let's just be real, Wade. I mean, without Sammy Gravano, John Gotti still would have went to prison.
Yeah.
Okay. Without Dominic Sicali, Vinny Bassiano would have went to prison. Without Jimmy Calandra, Anthony Spiro would have went to prison. Like, it sure is up the case, surely, but it's not the end all be all. I get people don't like rats, but my job is to create content. It's not to favor 5% of my population that probably won't watch me anyway. So I don't care about it.
And you said something there I want to key on, because you have all these people that are always in the comments, and I welcome comments, good or bad. You know, everybody's free to express their opinion. I don't ever, you know, censor anyone's kind. Unless you get too out of line, I might take something down. But for the most part, I let people, you know, say or speak how they want. But most people that say what they would or wouldn't do have never been in a situation where they've had to do it. Probably never been arrested. Probably never faced any sort of significant jail time. Never had that thought of, you know, being away from their families. So they can't even really put themselves in a position. Like you said, if it was somebody that was maybe from the life or grew up in the life, I might would say, I can see where they would say, well, I would never do that, or my people would never do that. You know, that's you, that's your call. But these people that have never been involved in anything whatsoever outside of reading the newspapers or watching documentaries, to say that, it really is laughable, quite frankly, because they have no idea what they would do.
No, and I think 98% of the people that say, oh, I'd never do this, I'd never do that, I'd stand on my toes. No, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
There are certain people that are built to go to prison for a long period of time, and there are not many people built like that. There are a small percentage of the population. Some people are, they're more comfortable in prison, and that's a certain type of individual. But most people like a nice warm bed and a nice shower and a good meal and a wife or a girlfriend or whoever. So yeah, I learned this a long time ago, man. I've been doing content since 2009, right? Whether it was sports or whatever. And the internet is undefeated. They all can do everything. They're never wrong. They're always right. They would do everything and you wouldn't do anything. You know, there's always someone that has an opinion. Yeah. And I disagree with you that everyone should have an opinion. There are certain people that have no business giving their opinion on shit. And sometimes I think they should shut the fuck up and worry about stuff that they care about. There's a lot of people that put their opinion out there. I don't think they know fuck all about what they're talking about. That said, the internet is a wild and weird place, and I don't try to generalize it. I know there are certain weirdos out there, but like I said, again, I'm not going to adhere to what 3 to 5% of the group wants.
Yeah.
95% of the people don't give a shit about people that cooperated. And that's where all the great stories come from. I mean, let's be honest, Wade, some of the greatest content to ever be put out in this genre was when Sammy Gravano did Our Thing, that podcast. Yeah. I don't know that there's been content better than that in the history of this genre, you know? So.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
You know, it just is what it is, man.
I listened to when it started dropping. I mean, I was hooked, and you're not going to get those, regardless of what you think of Sammy himself and what he did and, you know, all that, the 19 murders and basically being responsible for putting John away, regardless of all that, the inside knowledge that you're going to get, those inside stories, you're not going to be able to get that from anyone else. And Sammy's able to freely talk about it, not be, you know, fearful of prosecution or, you know, anything like that. So you're going to get the good content, and there's not a lot of people that can give you that.
Wait, here's something I never hear. Okay, I just want to ask this question. Ivano, look, let's not sugarcoat it. He's a bad guy, did a lot of bad shit, killed a child, not a good dude. Okay. Yeah. Was involved in a lot of bad things. Nobody will disagree with that. Let's stop pretending he sent some innocent man to rot in prison for the rest of his life. Okay. Why do we always have to act like the people that these guys are putting away aren't the scum of the earth? Okay. they are. I mean, these are bad people in their own right. And, you know, I think there are people out there on the internet right now in this genre that are the sons of these people. And rats are so bad, they're awful. We've got to stop this. And it's like, well, yeah, but again, your fathers are not innocent. He's not an innocent guy. That's some random guy. Look, if that was happening, I could fully understand what you're saying. But I mean,
yeah, it's not like he put an innocent man in prison. Like, you know, as much as the public and the masses may love John and his bravado, he was a gangster. He did do gangster shit.
These people, man. Yeah, it's John Gotti. It's Vinny Gigante. It's Tony Salerno. I mean, Anthony Castro is one of the worst people in the history of crime. I mean, just an awful, depraved person. Listen, there are just certain people that need to not be on the same streets as you and me. And I don't think most of America would have much of an issue with it, to be fair.
Yeah.
Look, is John Gotti a regal guy? Sure. I mean, you see him walk down the street, I'm sure it was probably fascinating. But I think as I get older, I realize, like, you know, my grandfather was a real man. You know, my father was a real man. You know, the people that get up and build roads and subways and skyscrapers, you know,
blue collar
people
guys.
that we should be heroic of, not people like that.
What do you, and I'm curious of this because me and my wife, I had this week off and we were actually started rewatching Sons of Anarchy, which is one of our favorite shows.
Great
Sopranos
show.
Is up there. And those shows, you fall in love with the characters of Tony Soprano, of Jax Teller, and they do bad shit. I mean, they kill people. They extort people. They set up strip clubs and brothels, and like they do bad shit. But it's the way the show is designed. It makes you fall in love with that person. Now, I've come across a few people that said they hated the Tony Soprano character, but it's very few and far between. Everybody seemed to love the guy. Same thing with Jax. And like you watch that, the whole arc through that whole series, you know, he goes from a guy that wants to do the right thing. And I think he gets sucked into that life. It's changed. And by the time it's over, you know, he's just an evil dude and he's doing bad shit, but the public loves it. Do you think that lends itself to some of these guys that held that status, like your John Gotti's and stuff like that, of why people love that folk hero? Because let's be honest, if you were, say, a passerby and your father was that guy that John Gotti assaulted in that phone booth, you wouldn't like John Gotti. You know what I'm saying? You wouldn't like it if he beat that. Or if he was, you know, somebody that he had killed, if you're a relative of, allegedly, we'll say, of John Favreau, the guy that run over his kid. I mean, you know, if you were a relative of that, you wouldn't like him. But these people didn't have that interaction with John. So they're not looking, they're looking at him as like a folk hero type.
We don't hear from those people. We hear from the people that were in that life, family of those people. But fascinated by that. I mean, I think the mafia, though, was really one of the downfalls to that society, too, because, you know, the film behind you, that film there, you know, The Godfather, those types of films, they made these people into being these, as you said, folk heroes. But in the end, I think it really just put a target on their back. But I don't know. I think in the end, like, we're fascinated by the villain. We always have been. But I think a lot of people just equate it with cinema or TV. Yeah. No one really, I think, thinks that. Like, I've actually talked to people that have no idea what the mafia is. They don't know anything about it. You know, there are a lot of people that believe Tony Soprano is like a real person. They don't know that it's a television show. And I think we've often been told, like, the mafia, well, they just mess with unions and they don't really do anything that really harms people. And it's like, well, no, they do. They kill innocent people. They extort people. I have people that think El Chapo Guzman is a folk hero, you know. They're I don't know why they think that. They're depraved people in their own right. But I think we all at one time thought like certain people are cool, you know, like a John Gotti or whatever. But I think as you get older, you realize that your father, your brother, you know, they're the people that I think really make this world go around. And I don't know why we support them like we do. But I think what it does do is it puts a target on their back, because I've heard a lot of people say, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen, there's an old video, it's probably maybe 30 years ago. It was Joey Molino did like a turkey drive or whatever. Yeah. And some kid walks up and he goes, Mr. Molino, you're my idol. And there's a cop like in the video where he says, like, think about what he just said, you know, like he looks up to this kind of person. And I think what it does really is, again, puts a target on someone's back. And the government hates people like that. And that's why they continue to try to stamp out the mafia and people to that ilk. And I don't know if I answered your question, but I don't know why we find the villain to be interesting. I guess because it just piques our curiosity, like true crime does or something like that. But I don't find them to be heroes.
I had a conversation with Matt Cox, and I think you and him just did an episode, and he broke it down like that. He was saying he spent a little time, not that he associated with him, but he spent time with Joey and Coleman. And he said he overheard some conversations, and he said that Joey referred to people like as, you know, lion rat motherfuckers. And he's like, well, he didn't lie. Like, he might have ratted, but he didn't lie. He told the truth. And a lot of what these guys do, they do tell the truth. So that you wouldn't, I don't know if you could classify them as liars. Rats, I guess you could give them that moniker, but I wouldn't necessarily go and call them a liar if what they're saying is actually true.
Wait, listen, I'm just going to say it. Okay. Because I've not really heard anybody say this other than maybe Gene or somebody like that. If you look at what Omerta means, what the mafia stands for, what the secret society is, La Cosa Nostra, what Joey Merlino is doing
is against it.
Would never be accepted whatsoever. Every old school guy, his own father, right? People that his father were in business with. I mean, it's just never something that would happen, yeah. Right? It's not accepted. And look, I get, you know, he wants to attack the people associated with his case. Fair enough. I've learned and noticed that Joey's never the criminal. He's always unfairly prosecuted and everything. I get it. And maybe there are times where he is, because I do think the government treats him, you know, a lot different than most people.
Yeah.
He has a target on his back. That's just the truth. Do I think without an informant or two, would they have prosecuted Joey in the late 90s? No, I still think they probably would have. But in the end, what he's doing is not an acceptable thing that a gangster or mobster should be doing. Now, I've said on record, I don't believe he's in the mafia anymore.
I don't either.
I think since probably mid 2010s, he has been living out of the area. He lives in Florida with his wife and his kids are near. And I think he looked at his life and says, okay, I'm 60 ish. I've been in prison almost 20 years out of my life. That's one third of my life I've been in prison. In 10 years of my life, I was a kid. So almost half my life, I've been in prison. What am I really doing anymore?
Yeah.
And I think he looks at what he has. And if you know Joey, I remember when I was a kid, 7, 8 years old, I heard Joey Merlino on the radio. He was on the radio in Philadelphia with a guy, Howard Eskin, and they were talking about his relationship with his NHL player, Eric Lindros. And Joey's always been a guy that welcomes the camera. He used to invite the cameramen to the Avenue Cafe on Passyunk Avenue. He would have press releases when he was doing the turkey drives. And Joey likes being on camera. He's always friends with rappers. And this is Joey being Joey. So is it surprising to me that he's on YouTube? No. Because I've been on record. Scott Bernstein and I talked about it. We went to Joey 3 years ago with this exact idea. We were not able to get it off the ground because we didn't have an investor to do it. But this is something that I felt like it would always happen at some point. Mm-hmm. Maybe not with me, but with somebody. And I think he's very good at it. And I think if he plays his cards right, he'll be very good at media. It's just who he is.
I agree with that. Because he's bringing out content that is new. People might have heard the stories, but not from him and his perspective. And like you said with Sammy, you know, everybody was so compelled when he come out and started telling these stories. What Joey's doing is garnering a lot of views. And I'll be honest, until their last interview that they did with, I think, the guy that was in the army, like the production quality could have been a little bit. And I don't have a team behind me. I'm a one man show. But like, even with, I would say, less than stellar production quality, recording quality, it was still good and it was still getting views. So you imagine if they tweaked it a little bit here and there, how good that could be. And they don't do long shows either.
The issue that they have, and you know, I think in this genre, you have to really watch what you say, because you don't want to be characterized as a hater.
Yeah.
Listen, you've been doing this. I've been doing this. I'm just kind of looking at it as to what I've had happen to me, where when I started this show in 2021, I lumped myself into being just a mafia content channel. Mm-hmm. And I think that's always going to be what I'm known for. And when I try to do another piece of content, it struggles.
Yeah.
And I think Joey is put himself into the mob world, that when he doesn't want to do that anymore and he wants to interview a celebrity or something, it's probably not going to take as much as maybe it could have from the beginning. I would have probably just maybe told a story every once in a while and kept it to strictly food and golf and movies and sports and lifestyle and cigars. I think they would have went a lot further with that. I think you and I both know that the mob genre is not incredibly big.
Right.
You can only go so far with it. And Joey is at kind of, I think, a tough go of it, because he can only talk about so many things.
Right. He doesn't have the freedom to talk about everything that he probably could have.
He hasn't debriefed. He hasn't did a 302. So he is still someone who cannot talk about the things. You know, you hear all the time, how does that guy talk about that stuff? You know, you hear Gravano talk about a murder, and it's like, well, how does he talk about that? And it's like, well, because he's debriefed and he's told the government about it. It's not like Joey's going to sit here and say, well, on this date and so-and-so, I did this. It's never going to happen. And you have to ask yourself, when, let's say when football ends,
where do you go? Yeah.
You know, and you and I both know, man, this is a hard business, man. And I do two or three shows a week. They do one a week. Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's hard. And I hope that they have an idea of where they're going to go next with it. And they've made waves, man. You know, they've been the talk of the genre the last, let's say, 6 months.
Yeah.
But we've seen people come and go in here and I don't know. I don't know how far it can go, but I think it's fun. I like it.
Oh yeah. It's definitely fun. I think people are getting the entertainment aspect out of it. But like what you said, this mob stuff has a shelf life, you know, in the sense of how many times can, and I like Michael Francis and his story is good, but there's only so many times you can hear that gas story. So he's got to start changing it up, which he's doing. He's having people on that aren't necessarily directly involved in organized crime. You know, he had Mario Lopez on his show not too long ago, which is, you know, not a mix you would think the two would be together. And Sammy recently had, I think, the warden of a Supermax prison. So still kind of related to crime, but not definitely not anything related to mafia content.
And I think the biggest detriment that Sammy Gravano has at this point, and he always has had, he could have been wondrous with a host. I think a host would have did really well with him. Someone that, you know, I think knows that world a little bit, that can direct the conversation, because, you know, he isn't fit to lead an interview, is he? Right? I don't think he is. But he's super compelling with the stories that he has. You need someone that can kind of push the conversation forward, similar to the way Mikey Scars does it with RJ. They have a good mix of he hosts, Michael gives the goods, and they kind of mellow each other out. Mm-hmm. Even the way Joey does it, you know, I think it's kind of a good mix of enough talking, and we'll see where it goes. I'm interested. I'm excited about it. I think it's a good show. I've sports bet my whole life, essentially, so I like it. And I think also the one issue they have too, detriment, is we talked about dedicating your content to the lowest form of listener, which is these anti-rap people. There's not that many, and they're a miscreant group. They're just a group you really don't want fans of you. And I think it's a tough sell to me. And I think that would be something I would have avoided, but hey, it's not my show, man. Yeah. You know,
that's why I like when I first started doing this, you know, I didn't, honestly, the mob wasn't even at the forefront of my mind. I was thinking about doing a true crime podcast, but even doing that, I didn't want to get boxed into just true crime. And I was talking with a guy that was doing it with me in the beginning. And I was like, you know, I want to cover movies and different things and maybe interview people. So he's like, you want to do crime and entertainment. And that's kind of where the name comes from. And I'm so glad that I found that name and went with it, because it has allowed me to jump really wherever I mean, that encompasses everything. Let's be real. Crime and entertainment encompasses about anything you can think of. You know, I've had wrestlers, porn stars, you know, survivors from different things. I mean, all sorts of things. I've had law enforcement on, you know, that's went undercover, and, you know, the Hells Angels and the DiCavalcanti family. So you can really kind of go anywhere you want to with that. Now, I agree with you 100%. When football is over, you know, I ain't gonna say I'm concerned, but I'm intrigued to see where they go after football season, considering that was kind of what helped launch, you know, this whole thing. It was supposed to be based around sports betting and stuff like that. You mentioned you're a big better. You actually worked for Barstool Sports for a little while, didn't you?
I worked for Barstool two different times. Yeah. I worked there. It's a lot of layered story. Basically, I'd worked independently on my own from like 2013 to like 2018. And I had a regular job during that. You know, and I kind of migrated away from it and started doing it. That's all I did. And in 2018, Dave Portnoy reached out to me. This was before gambling was legalized or anything. He asked me to come to New York. I had a meeting with them at the time. And they offered me a contract back then. I declined them because they wanted me to move to New York, and I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to work for them out there paying me, so I declined. And then we kind of got back in touch in late 2019, going into 2020. We had agreed on a contract in March of 2020. And I remember March 12th, 2020. I remember the morning I went up to New York, the first case of coronavirus was reported in New York City. I remember going up there. We did a show. I signed a contract, and I was going to start that following week. And I remember 3 days later, Dave contacted me and said, "We got to put this on hold. The world's shutting down. I'll talk to you in a couple of months." And I was gutted. I felt like I was super unlucky. That was it. And I remember in March 2020, once I got that information, I was 343 pounds at that time. I just said, you know what? I'm going to take the next 2-3 months and I'm going to get in shape. I lost, I ended up losing 150 pounds. And the end of 2020, I ended up signing with Barstool. I started working there. I then left in mid-2021, just a complete mess. I left, kind of went back on my own. I started this show that I have in April of 2021. Did it for a while. Rehired at Barstool in 2022. And then I left in June of this year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's been a long road with them. I, you know, been connected with them for a long time. I've had a lot of great memories with them. And it's been a long road for me, but
yeah. And you know, I think I had heard you maybe on Scott Bernstein's show, him interview. And that's where I first heard that you done some stuff with Barstool. And then I just happened to be watching it one day. And I guess it's right around the last time you left. And they were talking about you. I'm like, are they talking about the Jeff that does the sit down podcast? Cause that's where I really knew you from was the sit down show. What drew you into doing the mob stuff on YouTube? What got you there?
Well, I know I've always been interested in the mob really since I was a kid. You know, I remember when I was like 10 years old, The Sopranos came out. Mm-hmm. And I remember that was appointment viewing in my house. My mother, father watched it every week. And I remember I was fascinated by the show. I would sit outside of their room and I'd watch it, you know, in early 2000s. And I'd always, you know, I've always been somewhat older than my age. You know, when I was like 10, 11 years old, I wasn't playing with toys. I was watching the History Channel and stuff like that. And I'd always been fascinated by that life. And I watched the Gotti film, 96. I watched it in like the early 2000s. I used to watch those mobsters documentaries on A&E.
Oh yeah.
And I always had an interest in it. I always been interested in crime. And then when I left Barstool the first time, I always wanted to do a show about the mafia. And I just said, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to call it the sit down. I put it on iTunes and I said, all right, let's see how this does. And within like a month, I started catching on. A lot of people started listening to it. I then created a YouTube channel in summer 2021. And started really cranking out videos at the end of 2021. And then kind of the rest is history. But I've always been interested in the mob. And I'll be honest, I always wanted to do more of kind of what you were doing. Maybe not totally entertainment, but I wanted to just focus on all types of crime, whether right. it's serial killers or drug dealers. I actually really like talking about cartels. That's kind of my number one thing. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of went where it went, and I'm kind of known as the guy that talks about the mob, and then I created a TikTok and I created all these different things. So it's just about cranking out as much as I can and growing as much as I can.
Yeah. I think anything along, I mean, obviously I'm very similar in kind of what you were just talking about. You know, I think the first mob movie that I ever seen was Casino. I think I seen that before Goodfellas. And, you know, I was telling my dad, I'm like, man, you got to see this movie. And he's like, all them guys done Goodfellas together. And I'm like, what's that? So I go watch Goodfellas. And then after that, you know, then I found the Gotti, and then I was hooked on Sopranos, and I would watch all those mob documentaries, what you're talking about on the History Channel. They had another one that would come on called Mugshots. That was, and I would watch a lot of those. So I was always really into that too. And
when I like that show because they did a lot of they did other people. They didn't just do mobsters, right?
Yeah, yeah. They did a lot of other people that were like one crime, but you know.
Yeah, they did one time. I actually watched it like maybe 6 months ago on that guy, Muhammad Atta. He was the lead hijacker in September 11th. A lot of stuff I never knew about that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to, that's a great show. It's old school show, but
yeah.
It was really good. I'll tell you another thing. I mean, one of the things about this genre I really find fascinating is the prison world, right? Yes. So like I've interviewed some interesting people in that world. Just I like more organized crime, right? Like I know some people just like co-ed murders and stuff, but like I like organized crime, geopolitical stuff, transnational crime, that kind of thing. But yeah, I think you and I both have kind of a similar thought of how we kind of get into it, you know, but.
Well, and I got into it really, I was on house arrest for a situation I found myself into, and it was kind of a way to therapy for me, so to speak, because originally I started out looking into like wrongful conviction podcast, and that's another avenue that I've explored. There's a lot of people that spent a lot of time in prison that weren't even supposed to be there. And those are like the worst cases. I mean, I've talked to some people that have done a lot of time and they did shit that they deserved to be there. But when you hear about cases where people weren't even supposed to be there at all, that's the worst. And yeah, I think
a lot of those people.
Yeah. Probably the guy that I talked to that done the longest stretch in prison maybe was Michael Thompson. And I want to think he was like 45 years. He was a high ranking member of the Aryan Brotherhood. They had a, I don't know if that was a gangland they did on him or one of the, I don't know if it was a gang. They'd done a documentary on him. He was like the focal point of the documentary, but he was recently got out. And I think he had some charges pending of like, you know, something of some sort of, I don't know if it was a website or something. He had a business they had. They were trying to violate him and put him back in. I don't think that was successful. The last time I text messaged him, he said that, you know, everything was still good, at least until this point. But he done like 45 years in prison. And, you know, some of the stories he told me, and I think you done a short on this guy not too long ago, Tommy Silverstein.
I've done 140 episodes of the sit down. I've done many more on YouTube. Tom Silverstein is the most fascinating person I've ever looked into. I think he is. We often think about life, the life that he lived. He's a bad guy. Okay. Yeah. He is. He killed a correctional officer. He killed many other people, but the life that he lived over the last 35 odd years of his life is horrific. Mm-hmm. And I talked to a guy and you should look at interviewing this guy. Pete Early is his name. He wrote a book about Tommy, and he has written many books on prison. He did, a week he lived in Leavenworth as a journalist. It was called The Hot House. Very good book. And he wrote a book about Tommy. He went and met him and wrote his memoirs, essentially. And yeah, Tom is a fascinating guy. I did a show on the Aryan Brotherhood as well, the Federal Aryan Brotherhood, which I think is distinguished between there's an Aryan Brotherhood to Texas, there's an Aryan Brotherhood to California, and then there's a Federal Aryan Brotherhood. And yeah, we looked into a guy, Barry Mills, who was the
Baron.
The AB.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure. T.D. Bingham.
Yep.
You know, the relationship with John Gotti. I love that kind of stuff, man. I really enjoy any time I can get away from talking about the mob per se. You know, it's nice.
Yeah, I try not to do like mob interviews back to back on the show. Yeah. And I try not to do anything, not just mob, but anything back to back. This week I did happen to drop two back to back, one with Chris Colombo, one with Gene Barillo. But if I can help it, I try to space out everything just to keep up the diversity. But yeah, I've always been really into that stuff too. And I think Barry and TD, they were both at ADX Supermax, right?
At one point, I believe. And I think one thing about the game is that at 1.5 heads, right? So one was in one prison, one was in another. They were all in USPs, right? Remember, at one point, the ADX did not exist.
Yeah.
The ADX was built because of what Tom Silverstein did in 1987 to Merle Klutz, the ECO. And remember that day, another inmate, Clayton Fountain, killed another guard.
Tried to help him. Yeah.
It's kind of unbelievable. But the control unit at Marion was ADX like security. And they said, we need another place because this is not dangerous enough. We need another place. And then they built the ADX. But yeah, I'm fascinated by people like that. And, you know, even like cartels and just, I think we don't know truly how powerful drug cartels are. I think it's amazing that we don't like Wade, do you realize since October 1st, 730,000 migrants have come to the border, 730,000. If you pass through the southern border, you are paying a drug cartel a fee. Every person pays a fee, no matter who you are. If you're from Venezuela, you're probably paying $5,000. If you're from China, you're probably paying $20,000. Mm-hmm. Think if every person pays $5,000. In a three-month period, drug cartels have made $3.65 billion just in fees to take someone from the southern border to the border of Mexico to the border of the United States. It's crazy. Throw in the fact of how much they made from the drug trade. It's unbelievably huge.
Yeah, you're talking about just a transport fee, and it's, we're talking in the billions. That's not even getting into the drugs. That was one guy that when I first started this thing, one of the guys that I reached out to was George Young. And I spoke with him, and we were supposed to line up and do an episode, and he told me he wasn't feeling well, and he had some things going on to get back with him in a few weeks. And unfortunately, not long after that, he wound up passing away.
Boston George, he's a guy that, I mean, you talk about what a story. I mean, thank God we have Blow because, you know, I mean, we don't, it's just untold. And that's what amazes me about drug cartels today is that they get involved with fentanyl because I never understood that. You know, when Pablo Escobar was selling cocaine, all he was doing was selling cocaine, right? He had a monopoly on it because you can only make cocaine in that area of the world.
Yeah.
You can't make cocaine in Australia. You can't make cocaine in Asia. I mean, that's why I don't understand why people wouldn't just sell cocaine. Like, it's a party drug. People like it. You can make a shit ton of money, and you're generally not going to kill your customer base. I think drugs have gotten just greedy to this point where like George Young, he never would have sold fentanyl. Like it's just a bad business move. But George Young, I mean, what a fascinating guy. I'm glad that we do have something that he left behind, but I mean, what an amazing, interesting life.
Yeah. He was a polarizing dude. And some of the smugglers that I've interviewed they weren't necessarily, I wouldn't call them partners, but they had run-ins. And I think if you were in that business, you probably rubbed shoulders or bumped into each other at some point. There was a guy named Brian O'Day, who was a huge marijuana smuggler, and he was just doing marijuana. Like, he never went to the coke. And that's what I heard from a lot of the guys that I've interviewed that were smugglers from back in the day. They never wanted to graduate to cocaine because everything from the risk to getting robbed or shot or killed, everything was substantially higher. And they were still making good money doing the weed.
See, cocaine to me is, it's the only drug really that there's very little legwork you have to do with it. Right. Because the people that are growing the cocoa, they are doing the hard work.
Right.
Cocaine that's grounded and given to you, all you have to do is grab it and move it. That's it. If you're making meth, you're selling weed. Like, there's a lot of cultivation that goes into making those kind of drugs. Right. I do wonder about George Young. There's one thing that I don't believe that he said, and I would love to know if this was truthful or not. I wonder if he ever actually met Pablo Escobar. I find that very hard to believe.
Do you?
I do, yeah. Just because, you know, I've heard Vlad TV's interviewing this guy right now. He was a DEA agent. He said it was virtually impossible to get anywhere near Pablo Escobar at that time, just because of how big of a guy he was. Like, I guess I just find it hard to believe. I guess it's possible, but like, do I think he went like in the film, like where he went to his house and they were like hanging out? I don't know. I wonder. But that said, it's still a fascinating life.
I think if he was able to do that, it was probably more so hinged on the fact of he was introduced by, in the film, his name was Diego, but he was based on Carlos later in real life. Yeah. If all that is true, I could think Carlos would probably be one that could pull that introduction.
Slater is a guy that we, like, that's where it gets, like, the level of, like, he's, like, the number one. But Carlos Slater, I think without Carlos Slater, I don't think you would have had a Pablo Escobar to the level that you had it. Because even Griselda Blanco was You know, she was in the drug trade before Pablo Escobar.
Yep.
Right. And I think that's what's so concerning about, like, and I don't want this, I don't want your, I know you don't want your show to be political, but I don't think it doesn't matter who you vote for. You cannot actually agree with hundreds of thousands of people just streaming into the country undetected, right? That's not safe. You wouldn't allow it in your backyard, neither would I.
Right? I don't think anybody would.
No. And I think what I relate this to is in the late 70s, Miami was a beautiful paradise. Okay. There were people that lived there. They never locked their doors. And in the 80s, Cuba released all their prisoners and they all went to the Mariel boat lift and they went to Miami. And guess what happened? Miami, with by 1985, was the murder capital of the United States, 600 murders a year. Fidel Castro even said, we are unloading the toilet of this country onto Miami. And that's what's going to happen here. It's happening here. Because you know what Venezuela is doing in countries like that? They're sending the worst criminals and they're saying, get out of here, leave, go away, go to the United States. As long as you're not here anymore.
Yeah. Not our problem.
It's very, very concerning. Yeah. We've seen it happen already.
That whole cocaine cowboy era down there was something to, behold. Those documentaries were very good. That was another, I don't know if you've ever seen this movie. The movie I wouldn't classify it as a great movie, but I got to looking into the story and everything behind it. And I want to go a little bit deeper into it, but a guy named Don Aronow. The movie's called Speed Kills with John Travolta.
And I haven't seen that.
So it's based on a true story. The guy's name's Don, I think it's Don Aronow. And basically he built speedboats to travel, like run drugs, across the water. And he would build them for Meyer Lansky. Allegedly the movie goes is like Lansky had him working for him. And then he was working for, I don't know if it was Lansky's grandson. I would say, like, if you have nothing else to do, the movie's worth the watch. I definitely wouldn't carve out time for it. But the story, I think, is probably worth looking into. And he was eventually shot. But this guy would build boats. I mean, he built boats for President Bush. Like, he was building for the elite of the elite. And the thing about it was, once he would build one boat, he would sell it, the next one, to somebody else, and it would go faster than the previous one. So it was just like a, you know, a little gain for him of every, he could always just, he kept the customers coming in basically with the boats. But it's an interesting story. You should look it up and look into it. I think you'd probably find it interesting. Like I said, the movie, I wouldn't classify it as great. Everybody said it was like one of Travolta's worst he had ever done. But if you're looking into it as far as story aspect, it was really good. What about Barry Seal? You ever looked into him very much?
I did some stuff with him when I talked about Pablo, and I've done a couple of episodes. I did one on Pablo Escobar. I've done one on Griselda Blanco, El Chapo Guzman. Barry Seal is an interesting guy. I mean, there's a film on Barry Seal on Netflix. It came out pretty recently. I haven't watched it yet, but yeah, I definitely want to watch it. That era was quite fascinating. People made a lot of money. People got very rich. And I think the crazy thing about like people like Escobar is there was a group called the Ochoas that,
oh yeah, Fabio Ochoa, the big guy,
the big fat guy. Yeah. Like he was a guy who like made a shit ton of money, was kind of the godfather of cocaine, and died pretty much on his own.
Yeah. Not a lot of people even know about him and bring that up. I think I first learned about him from that Cocaine Cowboys documentary. And his name escapes me right now. He since passed away. He was in that documentary. He had the real thick mustache. He's got a book. It's called Desperado, Roberts. Yep. Very good book. But he was the first one that he even said he was like Ochoa was the guy. He was over everybody. Like he was pretty much the shot caller over there, if you will.
You also don't know that John Roberts, his given name was John Riccobono, and his father was Staten Island Joe Riccobono, who was a high level member of the Gambino crime family back in the 50s, was very close to Carlo Gambino, was, I believe, at one point the consigliere of the Gambino family. Very high level guy. John ended up, leaving and going out of the city and going somewhere else, and he ended up working, for the Medellin cartel. But so many interesting people in that, that world, that time in the 80s. And remember, that's how you get films like Scarface and, stuff like that.
Yeah. I mean, Blow, another good one, like we mentioned earlier, all those were really good. And I enjoy that. I'm not sure that guy's name escapes me, but he's the one that done all those Cocaine Cowboys. And he done the one on Willie and Sal, the drug smugglers that run the speedboats down there. I don't know if you saw that when it was on Netflix.
Right.
That was a real good one. I think that's just what fascinates, you know, people in the masses and the watchers, that people were able to pull this off. And I think people like to live vicariously through that. I think everybody has a desire to live like the villain, but die like the hero. And unfortunately, a lot of times you can't have it that way. And
I did a show recently on five gangsters that never went to prison in their time in the mafia. And, you know, I had trouble coming up with five. There just aren't many people that live an entire life, do the things that mobsters do, and never go to jail, right? The goal is, you know, whenever it is you pass away, the goal is to die in your own bed, you know, mm-hmm. with your family around and, you know, peacefully. That don't happen for many people in that world.
No, especially lately. I mean, you know, back in the day, like, did a Carter ever go to jail? I don't think he got arrested, did he? Who was the five that you come up with?
So the five I came up with were Tony Accardo, the alleged boss of Buffalo currently, a guy, Joe Todaro. Him and his father never were even brought on a crime. They've never been on anything. There was a boss in San Jose, California, Joe Cerrito, who's the boss for years, never went to prison. There was a gangster in the Gambino family, Joe Brewster, 101 years old, never went to prison, not one time. And I want to say there's one other guy I want to say I picked. I don't know if that's five or not, but there are a few others. The guy, Joe Arcuri, he never went to jail. One or two others. Even Carlo Gambino went to prison. Carlo went for about a year.
Yeah.
Tony Accardo. I mean, Tony was, I think, if you have a Mount Rushmore of mobsters, he's a top four mobster, surely.
And yeah. You know, that was actually a question I was going to ask you, because we'll slide back over to the mob stuff before we get out of here. Who would be on your Mount Rushmore?
Accardo, Carlos Marcello in New Orleans. I think he's the most powerful mob boss in the history of the mafia, for sure. I would also go with Charlie Luciano, due to the fact that he was, you know, essentially the original godfather of the five families and made the mafia kind of the five groups that it is. And then I would probably go with, I think you'd have to go with Carlo. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, limited prison time, very powerful, Capo di tutti capi, number one. And he engineered kind of the takeover of the family that he wanted. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest importance when you become a boss, is you have to be willing to take what you want. And some people do it. John Sr. did. Mm-hmm. Carlo did. Neil de la Croce didn't, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of the difference of legends and, you know, high level mobsters. But yeah, I would go Accardo, Luciano, Marcello, Carlo.
Yeah.
And Gigante wouldn't be far off.
I would probably agree with all those, to be honest. And Marcello, a lot of people don't talk enough about him, and I think the pull and the influence and stuff that he had, and that story of, didn't he like get dropped in like the fucking jungle because he wasn't a U.S. citizen. Is that correct?
Guatemala by, and that's really, I think that the reason John Kennedy was killed was over that. John Kennedy, obviously his brother, Robert, had this issue with Carlos and other gangsters his whole career. And he took Carlos and just dropped him. And Carlos really took that and never forgot about it. And yeah, I think that was one of the reasons. Look, if you don't believe the mafia was involved with the assassination of John Kennedy, I just don't think you really know that much.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a strong, it could be possible that he's not, but there's just too many "that doesn't make sense" kind of things, right? You know, whether it's Jack Ruby or Lee Harvey Oswald or whoever. I actually have said before, I think if you look into the assassination of Martin Luther King, it would not surprise me if James Earl Ray was sent by Carlos Marcello. There are a lot of connections between Marcello and James Earl Ray. Carlos Marcello was a fervent racist. I think he was incredibly powerful. And no one talks about him.
Yeah. And I've done a lot of research on him and, you know, down there in Louisiana and that area, New Orleans and that area. I mean, he was a powerful dude. And If you had to say right now, and I know this is, you know, that impossible question that nobody probably will ever answer. I thought one of the biggest reasons I was glad Trump got in office was there was two things he said he was going to do. He was going to release files on 9/11 and JFK. He was going to like basically expose everything that had been hidden on both of those. And neither one of them really happened, to be honest. But I don't know if he seen something that he thought maybe was best kept quiet. I don't know why the stuff with JFK didn't get released, because all these years later, we still don't have all the info. If you had to say right now who you think was responsible for that, what would you say?
The government was involved in some way, and they used mafia as a way to have plausible deniability and said, do what you got to do. If you look into like Meyer Lansky, mm-hmm. if you look into him, there were a lot of people tasked with killing Fidel Castro.
Yep.
They came to the mafia to do it.
Sam Giancana
wasn't able to.
Yep.
Sure. Right. But yeah, I think if you look into every situation involving John Kennedy, Lee Harvey Oswald was connected to New Orleans, right? His mother was connected to people in that family. His uncle was connected to people in that family. Jack Ruby was from Chicago, was based in Dallas, was very close to that crime family. And if you know anything about the Dallas crime family, they were essentially a faction of the New Orleans crime family. Okay. You also look at just, do I think Lee Harvey Oswald was the only shooter? No, I don't. I think there were multiple shooters. I think Charles Nicoletti was probably a shooter as well, if you look into him. And if you also look into to different people that were involved on the committee that looked into it. I mean, G. Robert Blakely, he's said on record that he believed that it was planned and carried out by Marcello. And remember, G. Robert Blakely is also the same person that created the RICO Act, right? Yeah. He's a very established person. The Warren Commission, most of the people involved with it ended up writing books about it, including Blakely, and all of them said that it was likely Marcello that carried it out. So we'll never know, I don't think. But I definitely think the mob was involved in some way. Trafficante, Marcello, Jimmy Hoffa, you know, all those people. Yeah.
And all those things, I think, are part of what the lore is to the mob. You know, things that will never be solved, that people always link to them. You know, I don't think we'll ever get a resolution on Jimmy Hoffa. I don't think we'll ever get a resolution on JFK. And I'll close with this. There was a movie that came out, I guess it was last year, The Cocaine Bear. Did you see that?
No, I haven't.
It's the premise is ridiculous. I mean, it's about a bear that basically finds cocaine in the woods.
Bear. Okay, I thought you said Burns. Yes, I haven't seen that. I didn't see the film, but I know what it. I get what it is. Yeah.
Okay, so it's. I mean, the premise is the bear finds cocaine that was dumped out of a plane and eats it, and just goes on a man eating crime spree or you know, eating right. spree. But it's actually based on true events. There was a guy. Howard Thornton, I think was his name. He was basically a smuggler, and his plan was to kick a few bags of coke out in this area, then jump out of the plane carrying some coke with him and tell the cartels, hey, I was getting tailed. I had to abandon the plane. I saved some. This is all I could save. And I guess he miscalculated the weight. But anyways, he basically plummeted to his death and died. His chute was, you know, wasn't able to save him. In researching that, there was a guy named Jimmy Chagra. Have you ever heard of him? So I was actually able to interview his son, little Jimmy Chagra, and then linked all the way that into the Woody Harrelson and Charles Harrelson situation. And I did a show with a guy that done, there's a whole series on Spotify, and it's called Son of a Hitman. If you haven't heard of it or seen it, it's really good. And that was really eye-opening as far as like all that his dad was involved in. And people don't, I mean, some people know about it, but for the general masses, a lot of people don't know that Woody Harrelson, the Hollywood actor's father, was an alleged hitman for the mob. Now, the caveat to that is the reason why he went to prison was for killing a federal judge. Allegedly, he was hired by Chagra, even though, what's the guy's, his lawyer, Oscar Goodman, got Jimmy off of that. Like, so the guy that's allegedly hired him gets off, but the guy that supposedly did it still goes to jail. That don't really add up, I guess, when you look at it from this perspective. But I actually had a chance to interview Oscar Goodman as well, and he was a fascinating guy. He also went on to be mayor for for 3 terms in Las Vegas. What do you think about that whole Charles Harrelson situation? Have you ever looked into that?
He's claimed that he was involved with the John Kennedy assassination. We've heard a lot of people claim they were involved with it. And I think that's when you become an infamous criminal. We saw Rich Kuklinski do it. Rich Kuklinski was a serial killer and then just started saying, oh, well, I'm from North Jersey, so I'll just say I was a mob hitman. It's not true. Never happened. Do I believe Charles Harrison was a mob hitman? No, I don't. I don't know if there's any proof to believe that or reason to believe that. I want to say he was from Texas, I believe.
Texas.
Look, was there a mob in Texas? Absolutely. There was a mob in Dallas at one point. There was a family in Galveston, Texas, the Maceo crime family. But there's no redeemable connection that I found that say that Charles Harrison was a mob hitman. Do I think he killed people? Absolutely. He killed a federal judge, John Wood. And, you know, obviously he had a pretty famous son. But, yeah, I don't know of any connection he has to the mafia. Is it possible? I guess, but.
I'm about like you. I don't necessarily know if I would say I would tie him directly to the mob, but I do believe he probably done work for powerful people. There's a guy and he still has a casino. I'm going to say he, but there's still a casino named after him in Las Vegas, Binion's Casino, Benny Binion. Yeah. And if anybody has ever looked into him, like he's got a very storied past. And I think that's where they started the first World Series of Poker. And that's allegedly where a lot of these guys met because Woody Harrelson's father was like a card shark. And he would, you know, get these guys and basically get them out of money. That's Chagger was apparently a terrible gambler, like would just lose hundreds of thousands of dollars and just, you know, not bat an eye because he had the money to blow. He would give the briefcases to the people in the count room and say, this is close to, you know, $1 million. And then they would give him a $1 million marker because obviously they knew who he was. If it was under, he would make it right. He would go play, probably lose it all. On his way back, they would say, Mr. Chagger, it was, you know, $1,000,010, you know, so you got $10,000 extra. He'd just tell him to keep it and walk on out. That was the money and the stroke that he had. So really, really polarizing individual.
A lot of very powerful people in the history of this whole organized crime thing. And I think, you know, it's really kind of my job and your job and all these people's jobs to tell those people's stories. You know, the reason I created the sit down, one of the insular reasons I created it was to watch The Irishman. And I think the last 30 minutes of The Irishman could be one of the better films of all time, with the end and the way it is. And it's fascinating to me that all the stuff that Frank Sheeran did, you know, if you remember in the scene, like he's talking to the nurse and she doesn't know who any of the people in the picture are. And he can't believe that. And I think he realizes, wow, you know, I did all this. You know, and nobody knows who I am. You know, I was around Jimmy Hoffa. I was around, you know, Russell Bufalino and all these powerful people. And now I'm just poured into die on my own in a bedroom with the door half open. And I don't know. I think we've almost forgotten about the mob in a way in this country. And I think it's a fascinating world. And I just wanted to kind of talk about it.
Well, you do a fantastic job, man. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I don't get a ton of time just because I have – you know, projects that I work on to listen to stuff for leisure, but I do seek out certain guys. If they've had a guest on that, you know, I'm planning to have on, I'll go to their channel, find a guest with that or a subject that they may have talked about and just kind of, you know, see the dynamic they went at it because I like to try to bring different questions. I know everybody likes to hear different perspectives on things. And I've used your channel a lot for that. Specifically Frank Mink, the interview you done with him, not too long ago was very good. And he's another fascinating guy. So, I tip my hat to you, man. You do excellent work.
Thank you. I appreciate that. You know how I met Frank?
How?
When I was in high school, we had, some racial issues at times in my high school. And we had a guy that was hired to kind of quell some of the racial tensions that we had. And he spoke at our school and he and I started talking. I found him interesting. And he kind of told me about Frank and he said, you got to read this guy's book. You know, he's really interesting. And I knew he was from Philadelphia and I lived in Philadelphia at one point. And I just kind of looked into his story and I lost touch with Frank for a while. And then I finally got him to come on. I'd read his book and he's one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. He has a really fascinating story. He actually got radicalized in the area that I live now, which is in certain areas, very rural. And he, completely changed his life. And I think, you know, I'm proud that he has, because he's a very good guy and he's a good man. And, you know, I'm glad you were able to talk to him. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And we've had a few conversations since then. He sounds like a really good dude. And, you know, I've been able to meet a lot of the people that I've interviewed in some cases, you know, not every single one, obviously. And I try to drop one interview a week, but in a lot of cases I do get a chance to meet some of these guys. And, you know, even some of the guys that people would kind of say, you're going to go hang out with him. And I'm just like, I always judge everybody of how they treat me. And obviously the situation and relationship that I'm going to have with people is different from the relationships they had with people when they were in, you know, the mob. Where that's not what this is. I'm basically an interviewer. And a lot of these guys I would just talk to as friends, basically, like Anthony Arilotta. I had to go to Connecticut. I was on a podcast with Ian Bick, telling my story, and it was not far from where he was at. And like, I met him, we went and we had dinner. You know, he showed me around the city a little bit, and, you know, was a very cool guy. I'm sure there are a lot of people that don't like him. I'm sure he knows that and probably really doesn't care, but you know, I can't really judge him off that. I didn't know him. I wasn't a part of that. I can just only judge him on how he treated me. He treated me good. So, you know, that's all I can really go with on. Anthony Ruggiano is another one. I've met him a number of times, and he's a gentleman to me.
Tell you this. I'm actually doing a show tomorrow about just the best mob shows of this year, best creators. And I will say, till I'm blue in the face, Anthony Ruggiano is, to me, I think the best. And again, I've talked to all these, I've interviewed him. I think he's super good at this. Mm-hmm. I think he's a guy who's contrite. I find him very interesting and compelling. He looks like a mobster. He sounds like a mobster. I think he's super good on camera. I thought he was excellent in that Get Gotti show. I thought it was really good. I thought initially I was kind of wondering, like, what did he actually know about John? But then I realized, you know, his father, I think you make a strong case, is a top five Gambino member of all time.
Oh,
I
mean, yeah.
He was super powerful with, like, I don't think people know that, like, Anthony Ruggiano Sr. created the careers for most of the mob over the last 30 years in New York, whether it was Nicky Carrazzo or Lenny DiMaria or John Sr. John Sr. looked up to Anthony Ruggiano in the 60s. I mean, Fat Andy was a legend. And having his son around is pretty fascinating to me. I really enjoy his stuff.
Yeah, we've done a few things. He was the first person that I'd ever done anything with in studio. And we had a few segments called Behind the Gangsters, where we would highlight guys like from Goodfellas or whatever, guys that he knew, maybe not knew personally with a great relationship, but just knew of them, knew their character, knew how they really were. And we would just kind of compare and contrast like how Hollywood portrayed them in films as opposed to how they were in real life. Like, for prime example, I'm sure everybody's seen Goodfellas, but, you know, one of the striking differences between Joe Pesci and Tommy DeSimone was, you know, the jumps off the page is the size. You know, there was a tremendous size difference between the two. He was spot on when he played Anthony Spilotra from Casino. They were almost looked identical, but, you know, nowhere near the same stature as Tommy DeSimone. And just, you know, we would compare if some of the things in the movies were accurate and as far as to what he knew. And they were all great shows. And we'd done probably six or seven of them. It's always been very fun. And it was my first experience, like, in a studio. And, you know, me, him, and his manager, we would all eat and, you know, hang out. And it was a real good time. And, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, he's a gentleman. And, you know, hopefully we do some more things together in the future. Is there anything you've got working, you know, coming up that you've got planned?
Yeah, I have an interview I've coming out that it's been a long, I mean, I've been trying to put it together for like a year now with the guy that I'm doing it with. He's a guy nobody's spoken to. I'll tell you off the air when we speak, but no one's spoken to him. My goal is to try to find people that no one's talked to, mm-hmm. You know, whether we're bringing them out of the shadows or whatever. See, I definitely have some things with him coming out, you know, and just, you know, just trying to find interesting people to speak to, you know, and keep moving forward. This is a crazy world that I'm in, you're in, that especially, I mean, more or less me, because I know you're not necessarily in the mob genre, but it's a lot of lunatics in this genre. And I think you just got to kind of try to just stand above them and just keep doing more than they're doing. So,
yeah, I had a guy that, I mean, I would consider us friends. I mean, I'd went on his show before and, you know, when he seen that I dropped the interview with Gene, like he sent me a message and was like, don't ask me for fucking shit anymore and block me on like three platforms. And I'm just like, is it that serious? Like, you know, don't act like
people, man, they're just, I've never seen a group more delusional. I've never seen a group more just lost, really. I mean, I don't even know how to explain it. I don't think there really are any friends in this. All of them are envious. All of them are jealous. All of them just, you can't talk to certain people or they get pissed off. I mean, listen, I went to high school a long time ago.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
I ain't in it no more. And I don't give you a fucking explanation to why I do what I do. And when you start paying my bills, you can tell me what to do.
Yeah.
When you don't, you know, yeah, piss
you,
off.
You have no say in it. And that's, I would live my life the same way. And Matt,
I think I can imagine who that was.
I'm pretty sure you could.
I think I know who it is.
You probably could.
That's not surprising.
I think Matt was it. Me and Matt done a show just kind of talking about the Merlino Morello beef, and Matt didn't really know anything about the mob. And when we started doing it, a lot of the comments were people that said like they didn't follow his channel. They just clicked on it because of that. And they weren't happy with some of the things he said. And I think he was just a little surprised that he was getting so many views from people that weren't his regular subscribers. And I was like, I said, this mob group is they're a fickle bunch. And like they will, they're it's almost like Joey or whoever they like would be like their surrogate father. They're going to like attack you like they're their kids. But he was a little shocked,
man. Lived in that neighborhood in South Philly. I've been, you know, been there off and on my whole life. And hey, it's a close knit group. A lot of them are related to each other. Yeah, they look at him as kind of the native son, if you will. I mean, listen, and I will say, I've talked to him before. He's a nice guy. I mean, he's a entertaining guy. I think he's likable, and he's the only guy that hasn't cooperated. And I think it'll be interesting to see if anyone else comes out, because he's kind of opened the door for people. And there are a lot of people that are in that life that are around that are still pretty young that would probably do it as well. And it'd be interesting to see if they do, but that life is slowly going extinct. And yeah. I think in our lifetime, we'll probably see it happen. But yeah, I guess we'll see what happens next.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm about like you. I think it probably will open the door for other people to start it. And it'll be interesting to see who follows suit. Well, Jeff, I appreciate your time, my friend. Before we get out of here, tell everybody where they can find your show, all the platforms, any social medias, all that good stuff.
Yeah. You can find me on YouTube. Just search to Sit Down with Jeff Nadeau. I have two channels. Unfortunately, my other channel, my big channel, was demonetized, but I've started a new one, and you know, I'm just kind of posting wherever I can. I'm on TikTok as well. The Sit Down with Jeff Nadeau. I'm trying to get to 150,000. And if you want, you can follow me on there as well. That's been quite a surprise for me on there. That's pretty much where you can find me. I appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. It's been a good one. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Hollywood Wade. That was Jeff Nadeau. And unless you've been hiding under a rock somewhere, go subscribe to The Sit Down and his other podcasts. We'll have it in the links in the show notes and our descriptions. We'll see you next week on Crime and Entertainment. Jeff, we appreciate it, my friend.
Thanks, man.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That was Jeff Nadeau. Please go check out his new YouTube show. We got the link to that in the show notes. Go give him a like, follow, and all that good stuff. Do the same thing to us. If it's your first time joining us, please like, share, review, comment. If you're looking on YouTube, hit that notification bell. That way you get notified every time we drop a video. We're on all the major audio platforms as well. Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Google. Voice is a little cracky. I've been fighting a sore throat for the last few weeks, but we made it. I hope everyone enjoyed that episode. Got a great one coming up next week. So be sure to stay tuned to Crime and Entertainment.